And then it occurred to me, what luck.
Okay.
I
so,
swore a solemn
my family
years
really
ago,
intense
I was invited to a party.
Totally different.
I never
I come from a large Irish, Italian, Catholic family.
Closing in on the holidays. Feeling the stress of it all. About a week or so to go. Want to get away from it all? Well, we offer you stories from Xfabula. Leah Delaney is here, co-founder of Xfabula, and we have stories about holiday stress tonight, so most appropriate. How you doing? Are you hanging in there?
Yeah, I am. I'm actually okay. I'm not so stressed out this year. I mean, I haven't started my shopping yet, but that's pretty normal for me, so yeah, that'll work itself
out.
You
and I are of the same ilk that way, because I haven't done hardly anything about it either, and it is one of those things, maybe this is a guy thing, that one day we'll just go in there, and it's like, all right, men, we're going in, we're getting three gifts from this store, and we're coming out.
Well, I already bought your gift for you, so you just give me anything.
I better write down
I'm going to take that candle and dish towel back.
Okay, I have to write down, I have to get that oven mitt for Leah. Okay,
yes.
Got it.
Well, that is a big L on it for Laverna.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, tonight we brought the stories tonight. We brought the stressy stories that everybody can sit around and bite their fingernails to tonight. tonight we're going to start our show, with a story from Adam Carr. He told a story back in 2010 at an event called Confessions, where he confesses something that a lot of us deal with. Let's listen to Adam Carr's story.
Okay, so I wasn't planning on telling a story when I came here tonight. I've worked about 12 hours today, and I thought I'd have a nice, relaxing evening. But when I walked through the door, the folks from Xfabula said to me, "Are you interested in telling a story?" And I'm very much a masochist, and I said, not really, but yeah, kind of. So while I was thinking, the theme is confessions. So you kind of have to think through all the different, run through your Rolodex of stories in your life, in your history. I didn't have one. I don't have a single confessional story that I thought of immediately. So then I thought, what's a confession that I can make to you all that would be, you know, like a confession that would be the theme of my story? And like, everyone's kind of heat-ish. You know, everyone has all these things in their lives that they want to tell other people about, but they don't. And I was running through all the things that I feel are kind of crappy about me, all my deficiencies, and I was like, well, no. That's just sad. I don't want to tell them about that. Well, no, I don't want to tell them about that, because then I'd have to answer all these questions later. So the one that I thought of immediately is when they were like, tell a story about confessions, I thought immediately to myself, do I have any fun-sized Butterfinger bars in my pocket? And I was like, whoa, I'm a terrible stress eater. I'm going to talk about that. So my confession to you all is that I am the worst stress eater that I know of anybody. And what I'm going to do now for you all is a genealogy of stress eating in my life that I've come up with and put on a napkin very appropriately just in the last couple hours. So in thinking about being a stress eater, I thought, where did it start? It was not when I was a kid. And you know why? It was because I was fat. Whenever I had stress, I would eat a lot, and I ate a ton. So I didn't have stress. You know, like, I drank a lot of 2% milk. I ate a lot of, like, Goldfish crackers. I knew nothing about stress, you know? Like, whenever I had any kind of, you know, anxiety, I would just fill up with calories, and it would be totally cool. And I was totally fine. So it really was up until college that I really found out. I was thinking, this is where I become a stress eater. So I thought to myself, well, I want girls who are taking art history classes to think that I'm cute. So I started eating better for myself. And there was always this, at first it was like I would eat, you know, less. And then I thought of, like, chewing gum. That would do it. So when I got really nervous, I'd just chew gum. But then I would suck all the spearmint out of a piece of Orbit gum. And it was like, I just sucked all the spearmint out of a piece of Orbit gum. There'd be no flavor left. So then I started being normal and eating regular things. And I would stress eat on every single paper I had to write. And I had a Korean roommate, and he'd like import Korean snacks in the middle of the night. I'd sneak over to his desk and go above his desk and the bookshelf. And I would eat all of his choco pie. Very big in Korea. And in the morning, I would have to avoid making confession. I'd just be like, he'd be like, who ate all the choco pie? And I'd be like, Who ate all that choco pie? What is wrong with them? You imported that from Korea. I am very upset at them. Parentheses, myself. So that's how I made it through college, just kind of stress eating on the DL. And then I made it to my normal kind of adult life, which is in front of me right now. And I work for a radio station, which isn't this one or the other one, but I work for a radio station. And in working for that radio station, I've kind of come up with some really, I have this equation for, I make audio pieces for a living. And every time I make an audio piece, if it's good, that costs about 200 calories. If it's great, 500 to 600. If it's terrible, 1,000. And in making those audio pieces, there's, you know, it's boxes of Nerds. It's sometimes it depends on the kind of audio piece it is. It would be like Crunch and Munch, or if it's real smooth audio piece, it's Caramello. Or if it's one that I need to be particularly impactful, a Payday perhaps, or a Nutrageous. I don't know how on board you guys are with these, but just last week, it occurred to me how ridiculous my life is in stress eating and how correlated all of my eating is to my performance. We did this fun drive, and I'd be on the air, and I'd be like, think about how important this radio station is to you. Public radio is such an important part of the fabric of our community. Off of me, and I'd just be... And you couldn't see me. I'd actually have in my hoodie pocket pretzels full of peanut butter that I would have, and I'd like pull them out and just be like, turn off the mic for a second. And that's what my life is like. So I did invent this story for this evening, and it's actually true, but I thought of what is a great conclusion to leave you all with. There's about, 240 calories in a Pier Street Porter. Buy me a drink. Or like a gravy and vodka. Whatever.
And that was Adam Carr telling us all about his confessions of being a stress eater.
That, you know, a lot of people find comfort in that or find relief in that. Others maybe turn to a bottle or something else. But, you know, we all have our ways of beating stress, and that's one way to do it.
Did you ever see that Onion t-shirt? It's I'm a chocoholic except for alcohol.
I like that one.
Yep. I come from an Irish family. It's good. It's all good.
That works, yes. Well, I'm on the theme of holiday stress and stressing out about things you might want to get for somebody. I mean, there are Xfabula memberships available as we speak. Is that correct?
Yes, and they are so shiny. They don't require batteries. It's a wonderful way to support Xfabula, and they are there for purchase online. And actually, if you purchase that membership during December, you get a little extra special kick bonus there. You'll get a couple of free tickets. One ticket if you do the solo membership. Two tickets if you get a duo membership. Two, our secret Fabula event. And those are so popular, so well attended. But it's only for members.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you jump on that.
As one company or something once said, membership has its privileges, I guess. So so being an ex-Fabula member has its privileges.
It really does.
Story number two tonight.
All right. Speaking of families, yeah, nothing like a little family stress. Lauren Poppin told a story at our Family Ties event in 2011. And it's great because I personally, as a single woman, for a long time going to Christmases at the Delaney house, can relate.
Oh,
here's
boy.
Lauren Poppin's story.
Let me tell you a little bit of background about my family. I have three siblings. I am, of course, the youngest. And I grew up in pretty much the stereotypically perfect family. My parents are still married. They even still like each other. We all went to private school. My mom stayed home. You know the type. And all of my extended family also, we all lived pretty close to each other. So when it was time for all of the cousins and my siblings' birthday parties, everyone came every year. And for holidays, we were able to see my dad's side of the family and my mom's side of the family on the same day. So we were a pretty close group. And as I got older, it kind of became the running joke in the family that I was the odd one, the black sheep of the family, mainly because my clothes never matched. And this kind of continued as I went off to college, and I came back my first year for Thanksgiving, and I dyed my hair. And this half was teal, and this half was purple. My hands also ended up getting dyed very purple then, too, but that's a whole different story. But somehow, in the year that then passed, by the time I came home for the next holidays, something changed, and my extended family became much more interested in my relationship status. I'm not sure what the reason for this was. It could have been because I dyed my hair back to a more normal color, or I just spent a semester abroad with limited clothing clashing abilities, so maybe they thought I looked more dateable, or maybe they secretly hoped I would marry some guy with a British accent, or maybe just because I was approaching the end of my teen years and it was about time that I start searching for the one. So there are a lot of things kind of stacked against me, mainly because all of my cousins' siblings were starting to get married or move in with their significant others, have children, not necessarily in that order. But when cousins that are younger than you start to have brought the same significant other to multiple family gatherings, your aloneness becomes very conspicuous to everyone there, especially the aunts. Like, if a cousin would bring it up, they'd be like, oh, so just curious, you have a boyfriend? But the aunts are a little more forward. So, do you have a boyfriend? Are you dating anyone? And at first, a simple no would appease them. But as time went on, no wasn't enough anymore. They wanted more details. Well, why not? Do you have any cute guys in your classes? Are you interested in anyone? Have you gone on any dates recently? Great. Thanks. How better to build my self-esteem than to say in front of my entire family, well, actually, no boys have thought it worthwhile to ask me out. So, no, I haven't gone on any dates. Thanks. Why don't you just tell me in front of the whole family that, hey, maybe you'd have more luck if you got a boob job or something? So, I mean, it's not like this ruined my life or anything. I wasn't scarred. I didn't dread going to family functions, but I knew that every time there was going to be this awkward conversation, and it would pass, and then things would move on, and that was that. But then we got to my last year of college, and it got to the point where even I questioned a little bit because my grandma asked me whether I had a boyfriend. Now, this is my lovely, wonderful grandma, the grandma that will make you a sandwich whenever you want, the patient grandma who didn't get married until she was 25 at a time when the average marrying age was 20. If she was starting to worry, should I? But, I mean, time passes. I graduated. I got a job. I bought a house. And the questions from the family actually started to dwindle. And I was like, hey, maybe they've just finally accepted the fact that I don't need a boyfriend. Or maybe they've given up hope. But either way, I'm off the hook and they can move on to the next single cousin in line and all is well. So I was wrong about that. It was almost as if they gave me a break for a while to see if I would come around or something. And eventually the questions resurfaced, and when the answer was still no, I don't think they knew what to do anymore. And that's when it happened. The question that will cause complete silence in the room of any highly Catholic family. Do you have a girlfriend? Now, remember, this is not a private conversation with one of my cousins. This is in front of my entire family. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, parents, siblings, and everyone turned and was waiting for an answer. The silence in the room was deafening. And I wish I would have had some sort of witty response to give them, something that would have just ended the issue. But I didn't. I mumbled some sort of generic, "No, I don't have a girlfriend either," and kind of laughed it off, and that was that. But it wasn't the question so much that bothered me. My sexual orientation had been questioned before, and rumors had been started and spread in college, but those were just fellow college students that I rarely talked to. I mean, my response to them was to marry my best friend Nicole on Facebook. So, by the way, we've been happily espoused for over 5 years now. But with my family, though, it was different. And I wanted to ask them why they couldn't just accept me as I was, by myself. Why did I need someone with me to be good enough, to be presentable to them? Fast forward 2 years, and it's my first opportunity to bring my boyfriend home to meet my parents. That's right, I said boyfriend. It went something like this. So I sprained my ankle hiking in the woods, and I can't drive my car anymore. Can I borrow your van since it's an automatic? And by the way, I shaved my head. And by the way, I was camping with my new boyfriend. He's coming with to get the van. Thankfully, not too many questions were asked about my new hairstyle, and I was able to avoid bringing up the fact that he was technically still married. So after the initial parental meeting had been completed, Eric was approved to be brought to full family functions as they came up, and as would be expected, everyone was thrilled that I was finally starting to walk on the path towards normalcy. I realized, though, that I had just entered this realm of a completely new stream of questions. How did you guys meet? How long have you been dating? And then after they got to know him a little bit better, they wanted to know more details about his life, his background, his upbringing, his relationship to Jesus. And sometimes I'd get pulled aside and ask secretly, "So, do you think he's the one?" To which I'd respond, "He might be," fully knowing that I wasn't going to live up to any of their standards of normalcy because I just don't do normal. You see, Eric had a son from his previous marriage, and the likelihood that we'll grow our family and move into the house in the suburbs is infinitesimally small. I live in an intentional community that's known as the hippie commune, and his ex-wife lives next door, and sometimes we just hang out for fun. So, looking back now, I can see that the endless questioning from my family is, I see it a little bit differently. It's like they had this paradigm that everyone was supposed to fit this mold of a husband, two cars, 2.5 children, and a picket fence. And when they saw that I wasn't going to fit that mold, they started to wonder about my happiness. And it turns out that not everyone has the same kind of happy. And though I felt that they were pushing me away, really, they were just trying to find a way to make me fit. And for that, I love them. Now, if I could only figure out a way to explain polyamory to them.
And That was the lovely Lauren Poppin with her family ties story. Yep. You know, being a certain age, you know, going home for the holidays, people start to question you and you're like, well, no, actually, I'm just waiting for this excellent one.
Tell you're not married yet.
Yeah.
No,
where's your kids? You know. I know so-and-so's neighbor that has this guy that's in the Army, and he'll be back in a couple years, and I know he'd be perfect for you. Like, no, thanks.
Okay, you don't have to fix me up. That's fine.
Right, exactly.
We're doing all right.
I'm actually doing great.
So, hey, something to be said for that. You know, but I think before the age of sending the holiday letter with everything I did this year, I mean, that's what the whole family gathering was about, exchanging what you did in the past year, which for some people was very exciting. For others, it's like, can I have another beer over here?
Yeah. Excuse me. Where's the noose? Yeah.
Thank you for bringing us holiday stories and bringing us stories this entire year. And we've got a couple more to go this year.
Yes.
Next week, we're going to be on Tuesday night, the 23rd, and not Christmas Eve, because Christmas Eve we reserve for music that's appropriate for a holiday night. So we'll be on next week, Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and then we'll be on New Year's Eve, too. That should be fun.
Hey, that's my birthday, by the way.
Is
New Year's
really?
Eve, yep. I think that one will be pre-recorded because I might be gone. Yeah.
I was going to say party in the studio or no. We'll record that one ahead of time?
We'll record that one ahead of time.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, as always, for all the radio you bring to us and the good stuff and the entertainment. We appreciate it a lot.
Thank you so much for hosting. You're fantastic.
Thanks.